This is going to be a long class, hot class, started an hour late. Aside from that, everything's cool. But it's my last chance to get at you before the Uttara Tundra. Well, actually I have a few more. But anyway, so it's the last class of this particular course, and it always has a special feel to it. And sort of a wrap-up. I don't know, sort of a denouement, right? So, like a, what do you call it? Like a crescendo, right? So, I thought it would be really cool to do the 12 deeds of the Buddha, okay? And that's what we're going to do today, which is a big subject in the Uttara Tantra. Say, Zepa? Chuni.
Chuni.
These are the 12 deeds of the Buddha. And this is a big subject in general in scripture, but it's not a big subject in the monastery, per se. I mean, in the monastery, you hear very little on... you okay? Do you need any adjustments?
Yeah, there's some adjustment needed.
Okay. I'll wait till you get it. Better? Okay, I'll start over. I'm Lord Buddha. And generally, it's a big subject in Buddhism, obviously, but interestingly, I think, it's not a big subject in the monastery. Like, we don't study Buddhist history much. Like, if you ask people about the history of Buddhism in the monastery, they just give you this blank stare. And, you know, there have been debates among Tibetan scholars like Bhutan Rinpoche and Taranatha. When did Master Taranatha, when did Buddha live, you know, what were the dates, when did stuff happen? And nobody knows. Like, if you ask Ken Rinpoche, when did this Lama live, he'll say, oh, somewhere between Atisha and Jetsonkapa, which is like 500-year stretch, you know. And, you know, we don't get this much in the monastery. So I thought it'd be good to go through it. I think it's good to know. The 12 deeds of the Buddha are something... they're not only important for historical reasons, you know, like to know how Lord Buddha got to be enlightened, but they're very important for tantric worldview because they are sort of a model or a message to us, you see? Like, according to the highest view of Lord Buddha, or there's several, you can say there's three views of how Lord Buddha did the 12 deeds, but the highest one, or the unique one, they call it, is that he was just sending a message to us. Like, he got enlightened long, long before that lifetime of Gautama Buddha in India. And, you know, every one of the 12 deeds is a metaphor for our lives. You see? So everything Lord Buddha did is a statement. And one of your homework questions is speculate on the connection, you know? Why did Lord Buddha do this particular deed? What was he trying to tell us? You see, what was the message for modern people of any time, right, that Lord Buddha was trying to communicate when he faked this? They say tsotumba, say tsotumba. Tsotumba means to fake or to pretend to get enlightened or to pretend to have trouble meditating or, you know, like that. So what was the point for us? So as we go through the 12, I encourage you to pre-associate, you know, why did Lord Buddha pretend to do that, you see? What was he trying to tell us, you see? So I'm going to go through the 12. I thought we could do them in a brief way. I'll just give you the names of them and a brief description. And then I'd like to go into some details about... there's some debates about some of them, and I thought that's kind of fun. And then there's a section I'm interested in, is that how did the Buddhist holidays come out of those deeds, you see? Like, why do we celebrate certain holidays, and what's happening on certain holidays? So I took out a section from one Lama about how the 12 deeds relate to our standard six Buddhist holidays that we celebrate during the year. So I thought that'd be fun for you. And then towards the end, there's something from the Kalachakra Tantra about, you know, what's the tantric viewpoint on these 12 deeds. I thought you'd enjoy that. And then there was one more thing. What's that? Oh, two more things. There's Sarah Judson, which is the great textbook writer from Sarah J, wrote a long piece, kind of, he put it more into a story, the 12 deeds, you know, like he didn't just put them philosophically, he like stretched it out into a nice story. So I thought maybe we'll just do that, you know, like I'll go through it, and it has a lot more detail than the other ones do, about what was his mother's name, and what was his father doing, and stuff like that. And then at the very end, there's this cool part I threw in from the Sojong ceremony, monk Sojong ceremony, which is when Lord Buddha was born. Like, he came out of his mother's side. And then he stands up, like he's a baby, right? And he takes seven steps in each direction, and he makes a declaration, you know. And I thought it'd be cool for you to hear that. Like, as he takes each step, a lotus flower grows under his feet, you know, like this huge lotus flower. And he does 7 steps in the 4 directions, and then 1 down and 1 up. And then he makes these proclamations, you know. And they're really cool. We repeat them during the monks and nuns' purification ceremony. So I just thought I'd throw it in at the end. It's like he's coming out of the closet, and he's like telling who he really is. You know, and it was just for me, I love that. It's very inspiring. It gives me chills up my spine when I read it. So, anyway, here we go on the first of the 12 deeds. Nin?
Nin.
Ne?
Ne.
Poa.
Poa.
You know what poa is, right? You heard the word poa, right? What's it mean in $25 a class posters? Yeah. Tantric practice of, I shouldn't do that, but of, move, that's your first place off of the actually. Moving your consciousness. But here it just means Lord Buddha moves from the heaven he happens to be staying in and comes to the earth. Okay. So Ganden is Tushita. Same root as Tush and thick and butter, right? And Santosha. And so he's coming from Tushita down to our planet, okay? And that's the first of them. And I'm going to say a lot more about them, but I'll just summarize, okay? I'm just going to go quickly through the 12. On your homework, you just have to list the 12 without explanation of the 12 first. So I thought I'd just do that, okay? So first one, and they have slightly different names in different scriptures. Like you might see them with slightly, it might not be spelled exactly this way or things like that, okay? Gandhanipur. What was the second one? Say Sumsi. Shukpa. Sum means the womb. Ngyal is another word that you've heard before, Ngyalke. But Hum means the womb. And then Jukpa means to enter. Sometimes it's called Humsu Shukpa using a different tense of the verb. So to enter its mother's womb. Okay. Her name was Maya. Oh, everybody have that? Okay. Got it? And these are all coming from a root text of the Uttara Tantra. Say Kutamba.
Kutamba.
Kutamba. Okay, what's the word for born, to be born? Kiewa. But this is high honorific. Like we don't say Dalai Lamas are Kiewa, we say they're Tamba. Okay? And Ku means like holy body. So this means birth, coming out of the womb. Okay? And in Buddhism, it's a big difference being conceived and then coming out of the womb, or entering the womb and coming out 9 months apart or 10 months apart. We use different words. Okay. So Kutamba. Number 4. Sone.
La.
La.
Ke.
What's Kepa? Master. Yeah, master. And then Sone. Sone means the fine arts. Like... In the Tengyur, there are sections called Sone, which means medical arts, construction arts like art, architecture, painting, sculpture, are called Sone. And so here, this word, which would mean normally the arts, mastered the arts, it refers to what we call the 64 Gyutsel, which are, in the old days, it was archery and... taming elephants and painting, and you know, it included all those things that a king should know. It's basically business stuff, you know, stuff that a king would know business wise to run their kingdom. So it's got to know military stuff, got to know construction stuff, painting, architecture, things like that. Business administration, you can call it administration, okay. And he became, like, unbelievable in all of those normal worldly arts, okay? Number 5. Korge. Tsunmo means, anybody know?
A big
wave
from Japan.
Yeah, that too. But this one in Tibetan means queen, a queen. And kor means the circle or the whole group of queens. And ge means what's ruwa mean? Like rulso. Yeah, to play. And so he had a good time with all the queens. Okay? Like, had his pleasure with the queens. Okay? That was part of his 12 deeds. And that led to... No, not really. See who's Tibetan is good. Say Ngepa? Juma. Or the short form is?
Ngenjum.
Which literally means it's the first of the three principal paths, right? Renunciation. But you remember, I forget what class it was, course it was. Anthony would know, he did this over and over. But anyway, it means to leave the home, to go away. Leave it all. You know, leave the worldly life. Okay? This is when he ran away from the palace, went out to be a yogi. Okay? Definitely gone. Right? Nianjun. Right? Difficult spiritual practices, like going out in the desert and sitting in a yurt for 3 years is kawa. Okay? Kawa means anything hard. Okay? Anything difficult. But here it refers to difficult spiritual practices. And then chepa means he did, he performed them. And this is where Lord Buddha spent 6 years with the Hindu yogis, like burning his body, sticking himself with spears, you know, trying, starving himself, trying like extreme means of liberation. Okay. Okay, number 8. Ningbo. Shek. Changchu. Ningbo. Shek. Changchu. Buddhahood. Ningbo. Heart. Heart or essence, right? And then means two. Shake means like dish and shake, but tatagata went to the heart of Buddhahood. This doesn't refer to enlightenment. The heart of Buddhahood has a physical meaning and it has a mental meaning. And we had it, I think we had it in New York in when we did Lord Atisha's Lamp of the Path on a Friday night. Remember? Oh, the physical heart of the Buddha is Bodhgaya, is Vajrasana, the seat of the diamond. The old name is, I like the old name better, Vajrasana, the asana of Vajra, the seat of the diamond. Modern name is Bodhgaya, right? And then the mental essence of Buddhahood is enlightenment, but that's not what it means here. Here it's referring to the place. So he got fed up with doing asceticisms on the, what was that? Niranjana River, and went to what is now called Bodhgaya. Okay? He sat himself down at the tree. That's all included in number 8. Okay? Went to Bodhgaya, sat down under that tree. Okay. Yeah. Number 9. Jom. Dude? Jom. Do means what?
Desire.
Demon. Demon. Yeah. What'd you say?
Sorry. Desire.
Oh, yeah, close. Same, very same, very similar. Yeah, like a tiny spelling difference. So, do means like demons. And then de means the whole army of demons, right? And then jom is one of the tenses of chom, as in dra chomba, which means what?
To
destroy. Like, smash them up. Okay. Defeated the army of demons. They never come in one way. Say dzok? Changchum. Became fully enlightened. Dzok means fully, changchum means enlightened. Is there a half enlightened?
Yes.
Sort of, according to mine only, especially Lower Madhyamika, Arhat, right? Lower Arhat. Okay. And it always used to confuse me. Samyak Sambuddha. What? Why? Okay. Anyway, he got fully enlightened. Okay, under the Bodhi tree. Number 11. Kor.
Chunkor.
Kor. Chunkor.
Chunkor.
Kor.
Kor.
Where's the N? You never have prenasal in second column. Exception. Okay. Yeah, don't ask me why. You know, like His Holiness was calling, you know that word for Siddhanta? What is it? Comparative school philosophies that His Holiness taught in New York for 4 days. What it? Gupta, but he called it Drumta. Yeah, because he's from Eastern Tibet. Okay, and they pronounce their prefixes more. Okay, he's going Drumta. You know, so Chungkor is the normal pronunciation. And then Kor means to turn the Dharma chakra, to turn the wheel of the Dharma. Okay. On the homework, I said wheels. Okay. Because it's the three, actually. Okay. It's the three turnings of the wheels. Okay. So Chungkor Korwa. Then, number 12, last one. Nyange?
Nyange.
Sulten.
Sulten.
Nyange Nedepa? Nirvana. Sulten is that thing like pretend. Sul means way, ten means to show. So it means to put on getting final part, what they call parinirvana, which is dying, you know, like appearing to die and leave this world, okay, at the age of 81. Okay, then I'm going to go through some, I'm just going to go through some stuff about the 12. Let me see. Anything from Geltab J. Oh, there's a very nice verse which Christy's going to go over with you in the Sanskrit, which is the first verse in which the Uttara Tantra talks about the 12 deeds. But it says, Tukje Chenpo Jikten Kien Jikten Kun La Signe Ni Chuki Kule Ma Ye Par Trupi Rangshin Na Tso Ki. And then they go into the 12 deeds. And when you do the Sanskrit, you got to point out, the Sanskrit is cooler because you get this thing, listen to it, Mahakarunaya Kursneam Lokam Alokya Lokabit. It says like Lok, Lok, Lok. He's like making a fun. But then when you get into Tibetan, you don't see it anymore, you see. But anyway, Tukje Chambo means Mahakaruna, out of great compassion. Jikten Ken, Lord Buddha sees the entire universe, you know. Like, this is amazing. Like, we're talking about, you know, I like this subject. We're talking about how does the world begin? How does the universe start? You know, what's the first click that sets off this thing of a Buddha coming to a planet, you know? Like, to me, it's very sexy, you know? Like, Abhidharma has this old thing of cosmic dust starts to collect in a certain part of space, and then two particles get together, and then four particles, and then a big cosmic energy wind comes, and it starts to whip it into circles, and then galaxies form, and then, you know, and they go into this whole thing. For me, this whole thing is the same, you know? Something triggers Lord Buddha. Lord Buddha is in a state of enlightenment already, you see? And then something triggers movement, you know, like, which is Tukje Chambo, Mahakaruna. Like, he's like, something wakes him up, and he's like, I gotta do something for people, you know, like, it's not so much like that nirvana we were talking about before, like the arhats that are just sitting there spaced out. I mean, according to the Mahayana, Lord Buddha's already emanating billions of emanations, right? But still there's this moment in history when he decides to, or doesn't decide, right? But there's the emanation goes to planet Earth, you know, this particular planet, and it gets into this whole idea which you should think about. Not only are the 12 deeds not just some historical thing, not only are they a message to us, but they seem to be generic. You see, anytime an enlightened being decides to go to a planet, it seems like it's the same process, you know. And Buddhism says that the formation of a planet is pretty much the same all the time, you know, like planets form along the same paradigms. Physically, geologically, and things like that. And then apparently when an enlightened being decides to go to that planet, there's always this generic flow of events, you see? So we're not just talking about Gautama Buddha's 12 deeds, we're talking about the 12 deeds as a paradigm, you know, as a archetype, okay? And that just feels cool to me. So anyway, there's this emotion. And you know, the Hindus have this thing, very big on that. When do you go from stasis, to movement, you know, when is the first click? And they have all these debates about it, you know, because they have to say there's a first one, right? We get out of it because we say that's just a reaction from an earlier reaction. But anyway, great compassion comes. Then Jikten Ken, somehow Lord Buddha sees the universe, you know, like Lord Buddha examines the universe, you know, and there's a whole description of that. I put it in here, I'm not going to go over it, but it's called The Way the Elephant Looks. And it's just like, looks backwards, forwards, up, down, all around, all times, checks all times at the same time, something like that. It's very beautiful. So I threw it in there. But like, he checks out the scene in billions of universes, you know? Like, what's happening today? You know, Jikten Ken. Then, Jikten Kun La Sik means the Buddha, the knower of all worlds, looks upon our world It says, maybe that would be a good place. You know, Jikten see, looks. Then Chukikule Mayapar. Then the emanation begins to be sent from the Dharmakaya. So Dharmakaya is what mean mainly? It's just emptiness. It's the emptiness of the other three bodies, right? Just this primordial state of emptiness, you know, this unbelievable state of emptiness, you know, this undescribable state of emptiness. It's what you see, it's the part of the Buddha that you see when you see emptiness directly. And, you know, you get this actual sensation of it being to your left and back and right there, you know, next to you, and you like get a perception of it. So, but without moving from that, you know, without stirring from the Dharmakaya, Trupe Rangshin Nato then sends out just billions of bodies, you know, sends out all kinds of different bodies, Numanakayas, to different worlds, okay? So that's the process as described in the first verse from the Uttara Tantra. And then they go into the 12 deeds, you know, then this Numanakaya goes through these 12 deeds. They call it Chokituku, which means what? Buddha Classic, yeah, I like Cult Classic and Buddha Classic. So Chokituku means Supreme Nirmanakaya, meaning the normal one that you always see in the paintings, you know, like this one, this image right here, okay? So, sends out mainly this Nirmanakaya to do the 12 deeds. Do you have a question?
How does that like fit in with the fact that it's not a conscious?
Yeah. Debbie asked, how does that fit in with the fact that it's supposed to be Hunduk? Which is, what do they call it? Spontaneous, totally spontaneous, unpremeditated. You know, how does that fit in? You got to understand one thing. When we give this presentation today, you got to keep in mind one thing. And when you teach it, you have to keep in mind one thing. Many of the presentations of the 12 deeds are coming from the Hinayana, from the Vinaya, okay? And they have a whole different take on it, you know, which since you asked, I'll go into. They believe that Lord Buddha was not faking it, you know. And by the way, it's not just the Hinayana schools. It's Hinayana schools, and it's also two other major sources, which you don't have to worry about, but I just want to be accurate, okay? Abhidharma has two versions. There's the normal one that we always talk about, Vaibhashika, detailist. Then there's a higher Abhidharma, which is a mind-only Abhidharma, which was written down by Arya Sangha, okay? So his brother, half-brother, Vasubandhu, Master Vasubandhu, did the Abhidharma that we always talk about, which is the first school. But there's a higher Abhidharma called Mumbakuntu, Abhidharma Samuchaya, which is the mind-only take on Abhidharma. So you've got that book. Then you've got Arya Sangha's Sade, Na, which are the five versions of the levels of Bodhisattvas, etc. It's called the levels. Sometimes we just call it Sa. The levels. And everybody knows what you're talking about. You know, oh, Bodhisattva Bhumis, and also Shravaka and Pratyeka Buddha Bhumis. Okay? So, he wrote a big book, five part book. So anyway, these ideas about how Lord Buddha comes to this world, which sound to Debbie like strange, because isn't it supposed to be spontaneous, you know, are what we're going to be talking about draws a lot from Abhidharma, Vinaya, the lower schools, Hinayana schools. And then the same viewpoints are expressed in a few higher schools books like the Higher Abhidharma, which is mind only. And then, what was the second one? Oh, the Bhumis, the presentation on the Bhumis, which is partly mind only, mostly mind only like that. Okay, so what I mean to say is, it's not safe in a debate ground to say that the basic presentation of the 12 deeds is Hinayana. Because some mind-only schools are talking about it that way too. So you have to be careful in a debate. Okay. So, when would you guess, let's get on to that subject. I'm going to give you what's called the normal view of the 12. Who did the 12? What level was Buddha on when he did the 12? There's the normal view, then there's the special view, and then there's the tantric view. Okay. So I'm going to talk to you about three viewpoints about the 12 deeds. If you had to guess, this thing's hot. If you had to guess, what? I'll just give you a debate question. You know, I'll say like, Lord Buddha was enlightened during all 12 of the 12 deeds. Kimberly, you want to try? Wow. So it doesn't say in authoritative scriptures that he was a bodhisattva up through the ninth. And then he got enlightened, and then he did the rest of the three. Right? It's true that they don't say that? Oh, so they do say that. So they're not authoritative scriptures. Good. So they are authoritative, but it doesn't mean they say that he was a bodhisattva for nine steps and a Buddha for three. Right. Right. Why?
Why do they say that?
Yeah, why does there seem to be a what do you call it? A contradiction here. Yeah, good. Yeah. So if you're talking lower two schools, plus those mind-only guys who wrote those few books, right? They're saying he was a bodhisattva up through 9, and then for 10, 11, 12, he was a Buddha. Okay? And there's two schools of thought on that. Okay? What kind of bodhisattva was he during the 9? Some schools say, like lower schools, okay, he was on Soglam, which is what? Path of accumulation, which is the first of the five paths. Some schools say he was on the path of accumulation up to this point, up to 9. Okay, then suddenly he goes, you know, actually they say that when he sat down under the tree, he was on the path of accumulation, and he didn't get up until he was enlightened. So the lower schools say that he covered Jorlam, path of preparation, Tonglam, path of seeing, Gomlam, path of habituation, and hit path of no more learning in one sitting. Okay? Yeah. Now, some schools say that. Then slightly higher schools who still believe he did get enlightened during that life say he was a 10th level bodhisattva up through the 9th stage. You know, and then he switched over to an enlightened being. Okay? So there's two ideas on that. And then some schools divide his career into non-ordained and ordained. Okay, I mean, his bodhisattva career in itself could be divided into the time when he was not ordained, and then the time he was ordained. Chukila, you're the Vinaya expert, right? Sangye Chomden De Chuchen. Let's talk about the Buddha. Nacho Yimba, Chicho Yimba. Did he get enlightened according to the old way of ordination or the new way of ordination? I'm sorry, ordained as a full monk. According to the old way of ordination or the new way of ordination? Like the old way, for example, is come here. You know, come to me. And then the guy's hair falls out and they get robes, you see. Then the latter ordination is, so you got to have this sangha quorum of five ordained monks, and there has to be all these requirements, you know. Which one, Lord Buddha? Yeah, right. He's what we call Rangchung Nyenzo. What's Rangchung Dorje? Self-made, Rangjung means self-made. He's a self-made FOMO, okay? Like it just happened, you know? And there's two debates about that, okay? I mean, we're on the subject of, was he just a bodhisattva, right? Some people say, when he left the home life, Ngenpa Jungwa, after fooling around with the queens, right? Ngenjung, when he went to Ngenjung, then he cut his own hair off. That is the case. I mean, he had seen a monk. Remember the story outside the gate? We're going to talk about it. But so he went out into the forest, and he had long prince's hair, you know, and he took it and he cut it himself. And then he just got some orange clothes and he put them on. And he gave up he threw away all his jeweled vestments, you know. And some people say that was the moment he got ordained. They call it automatic ordination, you know. But then some schools, the higher schools, say you're always automatically ordained when you become enlightened. Okay? Like that's called automatic ordination. Okay? You count as a fully ordained person the moment you get enlightened. Like that's good enough to call it fully ordained. Okay? Which brings up an interesting question. Is Vajrayogini fully ordained? Yeah, automatic full ordination. Okay? That changes things a bit. Okay. it brings up some interesting questions. Okay. Anyway, you can debate that when you get to Tantra class. Okay. I'm just going through the reading, make sure I cover everything. Let me see. Okay. Oh, we didn't do tantric, right? I found an interesting source that has... I'll read it to you, okay? It'll take a long time to find it. When we get to it, we'll do it. There's a beautiful description about what he was doing in Ganden, in Tushita Heaven, before he decided to come to this planet. Okay, and that's another story. There's a homework question that says, why did he pick this realm? Okay, like why did he pick this particular realm? The desire realm. And in particular, what we call Zambaling, which is our realm, right? Our particular part of the desire realm. They call it the southern continent, and then people think that's silly, and I don't think it is as silly at all. I think there are realms that we can't see everything, and we happen to be in what's called the southern realm, but Jambudvipa, right? And he always picks the central land of Jambudvipa, which corresponds nowadays to Upa, India, central India. The main body of India is called the middle of the world for humans, right? So why does he choose to come there? And that's on your homework. And there's two answers. There's two parts to the answer. One is that it's called Lekisapa. Say Lekisapa. Lekisapa means, and then there's a Longchukisapa. Say Longchukisapa. Longchukisapa means the other three realms, the northern, western, and eastern islands, if you want to call them that, or continents. When you do the mandala, you do those four continents. We're on the southern one. He doesn't appear on the other three and on other parts of the desire realm, like Mount Meru, because people there don't appreciate lay. They're running on Longchu. Bhutendriyatmakam bhogabhavagartam dursyam. Comes in the Yoga Sutra. People on the other continents are just interested in consuming. They are consumers. Longchupa. They just want to eat. They just want to drink. They want to make money, get a house, eat, consume. You know, that's their focus. They want to be consumers. And then they just go like that until the day they die. And why is the northern continent called what it's called? Dominion. Sound of terror, why?
Because they live for a certain amount of years and then they die. They kind of realize that.
Yeah, the last day. After 500 years, they have a guaranteed lifespan, 500 years. And then they hear this sound from the sky, you're going to die tomorrow. You know, and they go crazy. They just go mad, you know. And I'm afraid most of our country's people are like that. You know, they consume and consume and consume. Like I went to see my old diamond business friends, and it's very sad now. They're getting into their old age. And it's a very sad thing. They're obviously very hopeless. And they know it. And the consuming years are drawing to an end. The years when you have the energy and the strength and vitality and brains to make money fast, they're dragging down, they're wearing out, you know, and they know it, and they're very disturbed. And we went out to dinner, and, you know, there's like 3-hour talks about what's this Buddhism stuff, and, you know, it's like getting interesting, right? So anyway, there's your consuming years, right? But we are Lekisa. Lekisa means people who appreciate karma. His Holiness called it during the last weekend, he called it, what do you call it? Namchu, Vitark, Vikalpa. People who are analyzing life. People who are trying to examine their lives. He called it examining their lives. You know, he called it a whole tekpa, a whole yana, called people who are examining their lives. You know, what's going on? You know, and Lekisa means they appreciate karma. They understand karma. They understand that karma is involved. So anyway, on this particular realm called, you know, I could call it Earth as far as I'm concerned. I mean, nowadays in the Tibetan newspapers, they're starting to call it, when they translate Earth from a Western news report, they put Zambaling, Jambudvipa, which means the southern continent, means our world, our planet. It's a place where people live who have the brains to figure out karma, you know. So that's one difference. We're not just blind consumers. I mean, we have the capacity to be more than blind consumers, okay. With training. And then the second one was, what was that? Oh, we are able to develop renunciation. You know, we see suffering and we do something about it. You know, we have the capacity. Like in some, like animals are aware of suffering, but they don't like decide to go out to Bowie, Arizona and try to, you know, practice the solution or something like that. You know, like, it's only a certain kind of mentality that can do that. So that's why Lord Buddha chooses a human rebirth, to appear as a human and to come into this part of the desire realm. Okay? Let's see if there's anything else in here. Yeah, some big debates about when he was enlightened. Oh, so are the 12 deities of the Buddha the 12 deeds of the Buddha? Earl. There's a debate about that.
Are the 12 deeds of the Buddha the 12 deeds of the Buddha?
Yeah. Sure. If something exists, it's itself. That's an old debate in the monastery. If it exists, then it's itself. Anything that exists is itself, automatically. Right. So the 12 deeds of the Buddha are 12 deeds of the Buddha. Right. So the Buddha was a Buddha when he did the 12 deeds. Okay, you can debate that later someday. Okay. Anyway, you get the point, right? I mean, if you take the lowest school's thing, you can't call it the 12 deeds of the Buddha, right? Because he wasn't a Buddha when he did 9 of them, right? Okay, anyway, that's not so big deal. Okay. Here's a book by Chankyo Rupa Dorje, who's famous for writing the biggest Drumta of all time. 4 volumes, huge volumes. And it's unbelievable. It's really beautiful. I took a lot of the Mahamudra course from that. Okay. We should translate that in our copious free time. In there he quotes the Kalachakra Tantra, the most famous commentary, ancient commentary to the Kalachakra Tantra. So I thought I'd go through that. It says here, Sangye Chamdendeni, the Buddha, the victor, right, the victorious one, Sangye Gishing Tongsum Gitongchen Bijikdengi Kam Namsu, in countless planets of Tongsums, we had that in the Diamond Cutter, like world systems of 1,000 planets, 1,000 world systems of 1,000 planets each, in those, Gyume Tuku sends out his illusory body, illusory, you know, his movie, Nirmanakaya, right? And Jipadandjawa, Tayepa, Tayepa Nam. What I like here is he says Tayepa, Tayepa, which means infinite, infinite, okay? So he sends out infinite, infinite bodies to hundreds of thousands of world systems, right? Tayepa, Tayepa Namki Semchen. And then he helps Tayepa, Tayepa Semchen. To me, it sounds like Natsu Shindu, Natsu Sukui, Natsu Taku, Natsu Dujuni, Natsu Sapa Jishindu, you know, Suku Chupikui Tashi Shok at the end of the Vajrayogini Tantra. Sadhana. You know, may I go to various worlds. May I take on various disguises. You know, may I fit the various thoughts of sentient beings who want various things, you know. And I'll do that in various costumes, you know, and like that, okay? Tayepa, Tayepa Nam. Namki Suadepa. And then countless and countless beings asking for help. Namki, Suadepana, Natsuki Suatapana. And then he takes on Tayepa Tayepa Ke. What's Ke? Pasha. Aren't you studying Puke?
Languages.
Yeah, languages. He takes on infinite numbers of tongues to fit the you know, who wants him to talk in Namaho? Who wants him to talk in Sanskrit? Whoever wants him to talk in Brooklyn, you know? He can speak it. Okay, and then he goes to Jiten, Dan Jiten Ne Debe Chu. He teaches them all these, teaches them infinite kinds of Dharma. And then it says, Tamjai Kyanpa De Duma Mayano. Don't ever think he's multiple though. Just one. Just one is sending out a scent. And then he goes on to say that in the tantric worldview, he's like enlightened long ago. And he shows up, he's not in Tushita paradise, Ganden. He's in Okmin, which is below no other, the heaven below no other. And his real form is Vajradhara, like tantric deity. And that's the real Sambhogakaya. That's the enjoyment body sitting in the paradise. Doesn't look like anybody else. It looks like Vajradhara, like a tantric angel. Kaur. And then, you know, it can look like a lady or whatever. They call Kaur and then multiple emanations in in that paradise. Like whoever he's teaching, 10th level bodhisattvas, he or she is teaching, he or she just emanates as a tantric deity there. And then that that enjoyment body sends down countless emanations to tantric. The part I like is like tantric pockets around the world. Okay, it's like you heard Udayana. There's a retreat center by Tartang Tukum Rinpoche in California called Udayana, right? And we have it sometimes in the Vajrayogini Sadhana, Udayana Yutu, and Udayana Bishuwete Yutu. Yeah, and you see it especially in Nyingma text, like Ugyen means. Yeah. Padmasambhava. So what it means is there are tantric pockets around the world. You know, Udayana is one of them. Where is it? I mean, nobody knows. West. It's at the west. I mean, that's why he named it in California, Tartantura Rinpoche. So, but what it means is there are little, I like to think of them as spheres around the world where Tantra is being taught. You know, like Lord Buddha is not emanating 12 Ds and he's not going through that shtick anymore. There's just a pop tantric bubble in that place. And Lord Buddha is emanating as a tantric deity and teaching tantra to people. And that's the 12 deeds, you know, in tantric terms. It's just pockets around the world where people have the karma to hear tantra, real tantra being taught in a place of tantricas. Like small, I think of it as small little pockets, like small little spheres. Small little paradises around the world where tantra is being taught, and that's all the 12. That's the real 12 deeds going on, you know, nowadays. So that's the tantric presentation. So now you have what we call the normal one, then you have the special one, and now you got the tantric one. Okay, how are we doing on time? You want to do some more? One more step. Okay, we'll take a break. And you can read that in that selection from the Kalachakra Tantra. When you ever get your reading. I'm going to skip the holidays because I need to look at the calendar. I want to relate them to Western months for you roughly. Okay, so we'll come back to that. Then there's what's called, I call it the whole story. This is the whole story. This is by Sarah Jetson, Chiki Gyantsen. He's the great textbook writer from Sarah J., who taught Kedup Denpa Dargye, who's the great textbook writer from Serame. We say Kedup Denpa Dargye outdid his teacher. They were perceived as having some friction by they would say people of lower karma perceived them as having some disagreement or something. And then there's, you know, debates like, oh, he was just doing better than his teacher, you know, he was like taking his work, teacher's work further. And then there's weird debates like that. Most people just think it was a big tantric setup, and you know, Kedup Denpa Dargye wrote those books in order to fit the specific disciples in Serame. Okay, but anyway, Sarah J is extraordinary, Sarah Judson, and I think his presentation of the 12 deeds is the best that I've seen. So here we go, because Kedup Denpa Dargye didn't do it. Okay, here we go. He says, according to the Hinayana, he was just on the path of accumulation, right, when he came into this world. And according to the Mahayana, it's a long story. Let me see. Oh, that's a long story. He says, refer to my previous book. And I got it. I went and with the computer and I pulled it out and I put it in your reading when he says that, because it didn't seem fair to me. And he says, do you know there's a 75, 76, 77,000 countless eons, right? Like, supposedly that's how long it takes to get through even the first two paths, especially. Something like that. But more specifically, it refers to how many Buddhas you have paid honor to. You know, it's like when you get through spending 75,000 lifetimes honoring the Buddhas of that world, then you're on stage one. Then when you do 76,000 Buddhas in 76,000 lifetimes, honoring them, serving them, you get to stage two. And then when you do 77,000, you get to stage three. Something like that, okay? So after stage three, we're talking after stage three. isn't he? He went to, I gotta get this straight. He paid honor to the Buddha called Dipamkara, and then he put his feet at the head of Jemba Nambasik. It's another Buddha, and then that completed his 77,000 honorings, and that was enough karma for him to become the Buddha, a Buddha. So it's sometime in primeval history, after 77,000th lifetime, in the third level of honoring this particular Buddha, whose only his name is left in this world now. I mean, I couldn't even find the Sanskrit, you know. Just this name is left in Tibetan. I mean, it says, then he became enlightened. Lord Buddha became enlightened. And his name was Wambotok at that time. You know, when he really became enlightened, back then, his name was Wambotok. You can't even find that in the ancient scriptures, you know. The Sanskrit would be like Indraketu or something, but it's like gone in history. It's like so old that you can't find any. I couldn't find anything else. Okay, but he became that kind of, that Buddha had that name. Then it says, then in his 30,000th life after that. Okay, and that raises questions anyway. I mean, what does it mean take a life after you're enlightened? You see, but apparently he's like emanated in 30,000 row in a row, different people. And then he meets the Buddha called Kashyapa. Kashyapa is Buddha number 3 in our world, okay, lately. Like 1,000 Buddhas are going to appear in this eon. Gautama or Shakyamuni happens to be number 4. Okay, so he goes and pays honors to Buddha number 3, okay, called Kashyapa, right? And then he emanates, so he has emanated himself as a youth, as a divine youth, to pay homage to Kashyapa. So we're back like thousands of eons ago, okay? Thousands, billions of years ago. Then he says, what should I do now? Then he goes and emanates in Tushita, okay? All right. So that's the whole history, if you ever want to know. I don't think anyone does, but anyway. So actually, he got enlightened so many zillion eons ago. Then he spent 30,000 lifetimes emanating as a different people. And then in the 30,000th one, he pays homage to the last Buddha. And then he gets his rear end up to Tushita Paradise. And he's called Phaibu, which means divine youth, Dambato Karwa. Okay. And I'll just write it for you. I couldn't find it. Again, the sources are very old. And I couldn't find much for it. Say Dhamma Tokarwa. Dhamma Tokarwa. Dhamma just means like highest, like Dundam Dhamma. And then Tok means the top of anything, like the top of a flagpole, that what do you call it, that round thing? Yeah, it's called a Tok. And the top of a plant which is blazing with color is called Netok, fire Tok, which is the Tibetan word for flower. And then Tok means that bump on the head, or the yogi's hair when they tie it up here, that's called a Tok. So Tokara would mean like he had a special white blonde hair or something, I don't know. White Tok. His name is White Tok, okay? I don't know, some kind of a white top knot or something. Something like that. I couldn't find it. Like, it's very ancient. Really, really ancient. The only Sanskrit I could find is Shweta Ketu, which means white Tok. And that's, anyway, that's how he emanates to Tushita. That's how the story really began. Okay? The story of the 12 deeds really begins with Lord Buddha emanating himself in Tushita as this divine youth. And then he starts teaching Dharma there. He's teaching Dharma in Tushita Paradise to 10th level bodhisattvas, because they're the only ones who can see him as a Sambhogakaya, you know. So it's like he's teaching all these 10th level bodhisattvas. Then he gets this wake up call, you know, and we'll go through it. But anyway, they say that the Buddhas of the 10 directions, you know, play their cymbals, you know, push. And then he's like, wait, I hear something, you know. And then there's this verse, and they say, don't forget the promise you made, you know. Which is like, he promised to go to the worst world in history, you know, earlier. Like, before he became a Buddha, our Buddha said, I'm going to reserve, I'm going to reserve my activities for the most screwed up world I can find in history, you know, and I'm going to teach Tantra there, you know, like very few Buddhists teach Tantra, you see, according to one school of thought. So he's like, I'm going to teach Tantra. And to do that, you really have to find the worst place, because Tantra feeds on like the worst karma. Tantra feeds where things are bad. You know, like the highest message is available to the times which are the worst. You know, so he says, I'm going to wait till I get to in history there's a really screwed up planet. Then I'm going to emanate there and teach Tantra. You know, so he hears this thing like, don't forget the promise you made, and he's like, you know, and he's like, oh. Gotta go, you know. And then all these 10th level bodhisattvas are like, wait, you know, who's going to teach us, you know? What are you doing? You can't leave. We have to learn Dharma from you. We're almost there, you know. Just wait a while. He says, no, I gotta go. I got this call, you know. Of course, it's probably Abhidharma system, right? Anyway, I got this call. I gotta go. And he says, don't worry. I got this other disciple called Ajit. And he takes his crown off, his Dharma crown, and he puts it on Ajit, right? Lungtamba, boom. And he says, Ajit, you teach these guys. I gotta go, you know? And he leaves. He goes and appears in his mother's womb as a six-tusked, light blue elephant. Okay, like his mother sees it, and with a halo, like a golden halo around him, you know? Like, and that's how his mother dreams. And he takes this form. Don't ask me. I mean, each task has a meaning, and I don't remember. But anyway, he enters the womb like that. Who's Ajit? Me Pam, right? Maitreya. Yeah. Who wrote this book? I think it's very cool. Where are we getting the 12 deeds from? Who's reporting the 12 deeds? You know, in the Uttara Tantra, is the guy who's got the crown on, Gyaltsop, right? The real Gyaltsop. By the way, who's writing the book in Tibetan? Gyaltsop. You know, the regent. Yeah, it's very cool. The whole thing is coincidence, I'm sure. So Gyaltsop is reporting about Uttara Tantra, which is written by Maitreya, to whom the crown has been given, because he's babysitting in Tushita while Lord Buddha goes and does the 12 deeds. Okay, I think that's a good place to stop. Okay, then we'll start from the womb. Okay. Oh, one last thing about the birth, right? About entering the womb. Some people say that you might as well stick the entering the womb and the birth together. Right? I mean, it makes sense, right? Like, some people say, when they count the 12 deeds, they say, why count entering the womb and being born separately? I mean, really, it's the same sort of stage in this life, right? And then some people do that. But then how many deeds? 11. Because they say, that school of thought says, his time in Tushita heaven, teaching as a divine youth should be counted as the beginning of the process. So, you know, some people count it that way. Number one is teaching in Tushita heaven. Number two is what? Leaving Tushita and entering the womb. Those two together as number two. Okay, so you might see it that way sometimes. Then you don't get confused. Okay? Okay, have some... Relax, because I know it's been a long day. So get something to drink, walk around. We got up to the womb, I think. Let's see. I'm going to give you the long version, okay? I mean, we might as well have it on tape somewhere, someday. You know? We'll just keep going, okay? It's a long reading, sorry. Then they say that the Buddha looked, you know, the Uttara Tantra says the Buddha looked upon the universe, you know, looked upon the world. And then this is how the lower schools take that looking. Okay, the higher schools take it as, you know, just checking out the universe. But here's how the lower schools say he looked in five ways. Okay, one, he looked at what class of society he'd like to be born into, right? This is a big caste thing in India. And he decided it'll be royalty. Okay, so that was the first looking. Second looking was, what kind of people, you know, would I like to be born into? And he chose the Shakyas. Shakya people. Okay, it's one of the peoples of India. Okay. Then he said, what of my mother? I'm going to look at my mother. I think I'll be born in... Her name is Gyuma Ladze. Gyuma means Maya. Sanskrit is Maya. Tibetan is Gyuma. And I always wondered why she's called Maya, because Maya always implies deceit. You see? And it kind of bothered me that her name was Maya. You see? Or illusion. So illusion is not so bad, right? I mean, that kind of gets into emptiness and tantra and all that. But it's interesting that Jetsumba, Sarah Jetsun, he takes the trouble to say he chose his mother Maya, who was free of all Maya. You see? In the Tibetan, it's Yogyu Tadatan Drawa Gyuma. You know, illusion or deceit, who is free of all deceit. Implying that somehow her name means is a contradiction, like she, it was meant to mean no deceit, so her name is called illusion, Maya, in the sense that, maybe in the sense of emptiness, which is beyond all deceit, you see? So, that's, I thought that was kind of cool. And he looked at the time and he chose the worst time, okay? Which we call Dunyi, right? Nyingma, you know Nyingma? It's not Nyingma, okay? Nyingma means the dregs of society or the dregs of time or tea, what do you call that stuff in the bottom of the cup? Dregs, yeah. Well, the stuff at the bottom of the cup is called Nyingma also. Nyingma. So our day, the days that we live in are called the days of Nyingma. And there are five Nyingmas, and here's more, five more we'll take off on. First one is the times are Nyingma, which means there's a lot of conflict in the world. These are, and they're not just talking 2003, okay? I mean, this is like since about 2,000 years ago, okay? I think James said what? There haven't been 45 days of peace in this world in the last 2,000 years or something? I mean, some historian has figured that out. But anyway, then lifetimes are what do you call it? Degenerate. It's called the five degenerations. Lifetimes are short. Like, we're down to the 100-year lifetimes. And during the course of eons, you go from 80,000 to 100 years. We're at the bottom of the sine wave. Then it will go back up. Actually, it goes down to 10. And then it goes back up to 80,000 or something. So we're very close to the bottom. We're like at the last billionth of 1% as far as lifetimes, how long we live. Then Tawa Nyingma, we have very bad worldview, and it's hard to change people who have bad worldview. You know, like, the worldview almost prevents them from changing their worldview, okay? I think we saw that in New York, or we had it in the prison yesterday. Like, we're trying to explain the two choices about violence. Do you fight back or do you not fight back, and how neither one is correct? And then one of the guys didn't have... Like, one guy got it. The guy in front of me got it. He's a Spanish-American guy. He just, like, he got it. And then one guy in the back was that, yeah, but you still have to defend yourself, you know, or something like that, and he didn't get it, you see. And so worldview is kind of slippery. Worldview is really hard to change. Then Nyomong Nyingma. You know, Ngartok means mental afflictions in people's minds are tough. Tough. You know, like, tough and rough. And Yun Ringwa means they stay there for so long. You know, and you get angry and you just stays and stays and stays, you know. Okay? And then Semjen Nyingma means people are just in, are just, it's the degenerate times as far as the kind of people, meaning difficult to dua, difficult to discipline people, to break them is difficult nowadays, okay? Like a horse, dua, yeah? Okay. Okay. Then he goes into the conversation where the 10th level bodhisattvas are begging him to stay, and I won't go into it. But the main, yeah?
I have 1, 2, 3, 4.
Did I miss a Nyingma?
5 times, and I thought we had 5 lower school reasons.
Did we not have 5? Do you guys have?
Four ways.
Oh, we don't have 5? Oopsie. Oh, sorry, the first one I missed. Okay? The first of the things he looked at I missed, which was the country. He chose a country. Or a place, and that is Kapila City. Kapila. In our planet. Okay, so Lord Buddha chose to be born in Kapila. It's Kapila. In India, in Dzambaling, in Jambudvipa. Okay, that was the first one. Sorry, so now we got 5 and 5. Okay. Then there's the arguments, and then they said, look, if you leave, who's going to teach us? That was one argument. And the other one was, you know, times are bad, and there are 18 other religious teachers in the world right now. And if you, you know, sorry, I don't know, how's that work? If you leave as teacher, then those 18 will take over as teacher, and that's not a good thing. Then he lists 18 teachers who were around at that time. I couldn't find them in Sanskrit. Like, all these things are gone, you know, but there were 18 teachers around at the time, and they weren't teaching, like, perfect worldview, and they said, that's going to be the problem. But he said, don't worry, I'll take care of them. So anyway, he has a long list of the 18 teachers. Then some more notes. Dude, there's a calendar, Doug. I think it's on the Howell calendars? Yeah. I'm going to go through with you the, it's a good time to do the holidays. Because they give the date that he went. Now, you got to know the dates in Tibet are done according to the 60-year cycle, Chinese 60-year cycle, which there are 12 animals and 5 elements. And then you combine elements and animals. You know, like this happens to be, I don't know if they did it this year in here. It's the water sheep year. Okay, so among the 12 animals, it's the sheep. Among the 5 elements, the water. And then because things don't repeat more than every 60 years, you can generally date people. And then each cycle of 60 years is called a Rupjung. So we're like on the 14th Rupjung or something like that, since they began keeping the dates in Tibet. But that's how they date years. Then months, there's like 4 or 5 choices on how to do the months. There's an ancient Indian system, there's other systems. But there's a thing called Honda, which is Mongolian month. And I guess while the Mongols were in control of China and the rest of the world, this system became the normal system. So they date all the Buddha's life occurrences according to a lunar system of months. So I'm going to give you that. I don't know what that corresponds to. Let's go through it this way. I thought I would just give you all the dates that we would normally celebrate in a year, okay? First one is in the 10th, sorry, the 11th Mongolian month, okay, lunar month. On the 25th, we celebrate Vajrayogini Day. Now, that's not to do with what we're doing today, but I thought you'd just like to know that. So it's the 11th month, 25th day. And then the 10th day of the 12th month is Chakrasambhara Day. Yeah, the 10th day of the 12th month is Chakrasambhara Day. Vajrayogini's boyfriend. Okay. The 15th day of the first month is called the Day of Miracles, Chocho Duchen. This is a day that Lord... It's not a major holiday, but it's the day that Lord Buddha used miracles to defeat some guys he was debating. He had a miracle contest with some non-Buddhist masters and out-miracled them. Okay. Let's see here. I don't have any more for a while. Okay. The fourth month, 15th day, we call Saga Dawa, right? Saga is one of the Mongolian months. It's the name of that Mongolian month. Dawa means moon. And it's the full moon of that month. And that we call Enlightenment Day. And normally that's also celebrated as the day of the Parinirvana and the day of the coming out of the... Sorry. The Conception Day. Okay? The day of entering the womb. Okay? So those three events happen. We celebrate them on the same day. Entering the womb, getting enlightened, and passing Parinirvana. Okay? I wonder if that corresponds to this one. Let me see. Sangadawa Yanga Tse Chunga. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the day he entered the womb. And you'll get that in your reading. Okay? July 1st is Ken Rinpoche's birthday. I think we made that up for his green card application. Geshe Lothar got July 4th because we couldn't remember Rinpoche's but we figured 4th of July we could remember. So his passport says 4th of July. And then we wrote up birth certificates from, anyway. The 6th of July is His Holiness's birthday. I think that one they really know. They call it Trungpa Duchen in Tibet. Like, Tibetans don't keep their birthdays. Everybody in Tibet celebrates their birthday on the New Year, on New Year's Day. In Mongolia, they celebrate their birthday on Jetsun Kapa's day, which is really cool. Everybody. Which I think that's really a cool custom. Okay, the fourth day of the sixth month is to me the most important holiday. What's that?
Teaching.
Yeah, the day Lord Buddha gave the first teaching. So that's always celebrated on the fourth day of the sixth Mongolian month. Then there's a date, what month is that? Ninth month, 22nd day, is the day that Lord Buddha returned from another world where he was teaching one of his parents. I think it was his mother, I don't remember. Yeah. Okay, so it's called Labap Duchen, which means falling from the deity's place. Descent from the deity's, descension from the deity's place. Okay, and that's a big holiday. People are happy that he came back. And then just for for your information, the 25th day of the 10th month is always is called Gandeng Namche, which means the offering of the 25th of Tushita, and that's Jetsun Kapa's day. Mm-hmm. Now back out 10 months from the after the conception day. Sorry. What do you come up with? Conception day was 15th of the 4th month. So the 2nd month around the 15th. I think it's the 8th, but they don't have it here. But a minor holiday is the date of entering, coming out of the womb. Okay? Like according to scripture, it was a full 10 months. And then so we do celebrate a minor holiday on the day he came out. I believe they chop off a week, but I'll check it for you. Okay? And anyway, about 9.5 months to 10 months later, we celebrate the actual coming out of the womb. Okay? So that's just a custom. And there'll be a summary of all those holidays. So I think there should be 6 major holidays. I think they speak of 6 major holidays, but you can check. And I'll have it in your reading. He came out of his mother's right side. Some people say her armpit. Some people say the loa, which is like the right side of her lung, but the right side of her chest, and just came out. No blood, no problem. She didn't feel much. They say that holy beings are born like miraculously and don't hurt their mothers. Okay, so he just popped out. Okay, and we'll talk later about what he said. And then all the deities dropped flowers on his head, and people picked him up. Deities picked him up in a golden cloth. And people did an offering, and when we do sojong, you'll see the trusel, where Rinpoche will get out a basin, and there'll be a mirror, and you take a special feather, and you repeat that process. Jitar kyuki tambani, deshin shekun trusutar, haye chini dabaye deshin daki chugyo. It's in the daki also, in the sadhana. Famous verses, okay? Then he takes his steps in the 7 directions. In the 6 directions. 7 steps each in the 6 directions. And that's still sort of a little custom when you bow down before you give bodhisattva vows. Like, if you've ever seen His Holiness do the whole thing, he'll do prostrations in each of the directions. I thought you'd like to know why he was called Siddhartha and why he was called Shakyamuni. And at this point in the text, and it's on your homework, Sarah Jetson gives a nice explanation. Like, I haven't seen them explain so nicely. He says, when Lord Buddha came out of his mother's side, the deities dropped jewels. Like, there's this big thing that when a very virtuous person's around, jewels will drop from the sky, like just diamonds and rubies and emeralds and things like that. Just like, I assume they don't hurt anybody. And then the whole world was enveloped in this beautiful light, like a rainbow light. And then all the people around there, like all the people who lived in India or something, anybody who was sick was suddenly cured. Anybody who was emotionally stressed suddenly was happy, you know. And people just went into states of bliss, spontaneous states of bliss everywhere. And then this thing happened where everybody who wanted something got it that day. You know, like everybody was hoping for a new car, got a new car, you know, like that. And that's called, that object that you want is called dun. Like dun means artha. Artha means dun. Artha in Sanskrit means dun. And it just means object that you're working for. Like shen dun and rang dun. And then drup means to get it. And that is siddha in Sanskrit. So siddha artha means got what they wanted. So everybody, the king and the queen, decided to name him Siddha Artha, meaning everybody got what they wanted that day. So let's call him Siddhartha. I always wondered why he was called Siddhartha before he became enlightened, you see, because, you know, it would make sense. And that's why so many Tibetans are called Dundrup. Or you see it as Dundrup, right? And it means Siddhartha. Okay, yeah.
Didn't the same thing happen when he was, like, talked on the Heart Sutra, that he gained light and everybody got what they wanted?
I don't know. I don't remember it exactly, but something like that. I know, like, the earth would shake and, you know, yeah. Especially when somebody sees emptiness or something directly, then there's an earthquake and stuff like that. Usually, the whole universe quakes, like, goes, the matrix shifts. Then this is cool. The tribe in which he was born was called Shakyas, right? Not to be confused with Sakyas, which are later Tibetan lineage, you know, like a couple thousand years. So Shakya is not the same as Sakya. Shakya. And then Muni comes from a root, Indo-European is M-E-U-H, Muh, and it means to be silent. And the words mute and mum and mystery and mystic come from that root. It means to be silent. And the Sanskrit is Muni. And you might hear it in modern yoga schools. People will say, I'm going to do mauna for a year, which is a derivative of Muni. And it means I'm going to keep silence. So we kept mauna for 3 years. Pretty good. In retreat. You know. So Muni means silent one, the one who doesn't speak. And then when Senator Jetson explains it, he's obviously drawing from an older scripture. Why? He's going to explain why he was called the quiet Shakya. You know, by the way, what he says is, all the Shakya people were big blabbermouths up to that time. You know, and everybody was just gossiping about nothing. You know, they spent most of the day talking about meaningless stuff and busy. You know, just busy all day. So he counts talking and busyness as one thing. You know, he says, same thing. You know, like, just being busy all day, too much to do, looking at all these newspapers, looking at the news, listening to the news, talking about the news, you know, this whole thing about needing to know too much and having too much to do and just being too busy, you know. And he said, but here comes a guy who is Muni, you know, who is quiet. He's meaning quiet life, simple life, and then verbally just quiet. So he was called Shakyamuni. Okay, Shakyamuni. But the Tibetans translated as Tupa, the able one. You see? The able one. The early Tibetan translators chose the word Tupa. So it doesn't come out in the Tibetan. You see, when you read this paragraph in the Tibetan, it says, he's called the able one because he didn't engage in that blah blah that everybody else did. You see? And then you're like, you see? So it's good to know. It's good to study Sanskrit. It opens your eyes further. Once your Tibetan is perfect, it's good to go to Sanskrit. Okay. By the way, sometimes he's called the God of Gods, and he explains that name. He says, because even the gods bowed down to him, but that you knew that. Okay. A bunch of other kings were born that day. You don't need to know that. Then in the Tse Ryo Kangchen, what's Kangchen? Himala Vat. In the Himalayas. In the land of the snows. In the Himalayas. Okay? There was a yogi called Nakboa, which means the black one. Sometimes Krishna is translated that way because he's dark. Krishna can mean the dark side of the moon and stuff like that. Okay? Because his skin is dark blue. But anyway, there was a yogi named Nakboa. and he's staying up in the Himalayas, and he uses his ESP, you know, and he looks down to that city, Kapila City, okay, and he says, a guy has been born today, you know, and if he becomes a world emperor, oh, sorry, he could either become a world emperor, or, what does it say, sorry, if he stays in the home life, he'll become a world emperor. If he chooses to become a yogi, he'll get enlightened. You know, and he gives this prophecy. Okay, and then the yogi staying at the Himalayas says, since these are the bad days, these are the days of strife, I think he should be enlightened. I think he should go the second way. Okay, so that finishes that. The where are we? Oh, that was the. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, that finished the... What was the third one? Ganden? Oh, yeah, born. So he's come out now. Okay, sorry, we're going slow, right? Number four. Basically, he studies... He lists. He learns to read and write. He masters the scholastic sciences. He masters archery. He masters swimming. He masters elephant riding and taming elephants. And just basically, he gets to know all the things he needs to know to run a kingdom. Like, okay. Then we get the fifth one, playing with the queens. Okay. And it says, Jetsimba's funny. He says, Lord Buddha had to relate to all of us, right? So he had to do this one too. And so he names... He spends along the next part of his life, up until he's 29, he spends all those years in the home life. And it's not stated in the Tibetan sources I've read, but, you know, it's common knowledge that he was married and he had a child. And here it just emphasizes that he was basically having a good time that any young man would have who was in charge of a kingdom with a whole circle of queens, okay? Mm. Then he gets on to the sixth deed, which is leaving the home life, okay? Leaving the worldly life. And he says when he was 29 years old, he gets this call again. He gets this divine call again. Like the Buddhas of the Ten Directions wake him up. He gets a wake-up call, okay? And then Sarah Jessen starts to quote the Lalita Vistara Sutra, like the Cosmic Play Sutra. And I really like it, so I'm just going to read it to you. This is like just an off-the-cuff translation. And this is what he hears when he gets his wake-up call. Like, he just hears it in his own head, right? Cyclic life is like a bottle filled with bees. You know, mad bees. These three worlds are impermanent. Like a cloud in the fall, spring. Watching people get born and die is like watching a drama, you know, like a play. It's just like people just coming in stage right, leaving stage left, just boom, they're gone, you know. They get shot during the play. And the speed at which they cross the stage is about the speed of lightning, you know. I mean, when you get to about my age, you start to appreciate that, you know. Like, I meet my boss, you know. This guy's made, he's up to $200 million a year now, right? And he's old, and he's running out of energy, juice, and you can see it. And then you're, like, trying to remember, like, the last 20 years is just like a flash of lightning. It's all over, you know. It's just gone, you know. The way water falls off a very steep cliff. Our life is flowing like that. Now you could get out of all this trouble and reach deathlessness if you could just get enlightened. Also, it's your responsibility to give the nectar of deathlessness to all these thirsty people in the world. And don't forget, you made that promise earlier. So, I think you got to get out of the palace. You know, so he gets this message. This is his message. So, because of that message, he sneaks out. And as far as the eastern gate of the palace, and as you know, he sees a man who's gotten old. Like, the king has been protecting him from seeing anything bad, because he knows the prophecy of the wise men. So then he sees his first old person, you know, and I remember the story, right? He says, he asks his friend, what happened to this guy, you know? He says, he got old. He says, well, why? He says, what do you mean why? Everybody gets old. It just happens, you know. He says, am I going to get like that? Says, sure. So then he gets really freaked out. That was the first of the four gates, okay? Now the second gate is the southern gate. And he sees a sick man, okay? And then he freaks out. And he gets the same question, same process. At the western gate, he sees a body being carried by, and he just freaks out. Like, he's just really freaked out. Then when he goes to the northern gate, he sees this beautiful monk passing by, you know, like totally happy and blissed out and just walking, and, you know, in the saffron robes, okay? And he's like, now that's cool. Then he asks his father, can I go do that, become a monk, you know? And the father says, absolutely not. And then the father puts soldiers all around the palace, like a whole body, like a soldier every few feet around the palace, 24-hour guard. And then Shakra, who is a divine being, right, one of the deities, puts them all to sleep. And then he's able to escape the palace. Okay, and basically Shakra tells him, go out and do what you have to do, you know, go help people. Okay, and then he goes out and he switches his clothing and he cuts his hair. And he makes himself a monk, okay, which is interesting. Okay, now we're on to the, what was number seven? Tapas, right? Yeah, extreme means, like doing these difficult hardships. And it says here, you got to know, in the lower schools, okay, in the Abhidharma system, he goes through 6 years of trouble. You can say 6 years of a wrong spiritual path that doesn't work. Because he slipped one day and said one bad word to Kashyapa Buddha in his previous life. Okay? So, you know, according to the lowest school, he had to go through 6 years of intense pain because he slipped one day and said one negative thing to Kashyapa Buddha. Okay? So, that's the lowest school. So it says, also, in order that we would know that we have to work hard. You know, like, it doesn't come easy. And if you had to summarize what His Holiness is always saying in every teaching He ever gives, it's like, you know, don't expect it to happen overnight. It's not going to happen overnight. It takes years of training, years of work, you know? So like that. Okay. Oh, this is a funny story. You're getting tired, but that's all right. His body got skinny, he looked like he was about to die, or he had died, and his father, whose name was Suddhodana, saw him and started to cry in out of depressed, you know, like worried about him. And he comes out of his deep meditation. He's been in a meditation called sky-like meditation, right? And he says, Ninda karsa salatung yansi. It is possible that one day the moon and the sun and even the stars might burn out. That's possible. Like, the day will come. You know? Soso keo yin yang namichi. I may not have seen emptiness yet, but before I'm done in this life, I will reach deathlessness. You know? I may be a pratyekyana, but before I'm done, I'll reach deathlessness. Okay? By the way, that's one of the scriptures that people quote to prove that he wasn't a Buddha to start out with, but anyway, you know that. Dechir dila nyangen kyumache. So don't do nyangen. What's nyangen? What's nyangen le deba? Going beyond nyangen is nirvana. But what does nyangen itself mean? Grieving, worry. Don't nyangen about me. I'm not going to die, you know. You don't have to worry about me, you know. Rinpo Mito Chanju said, before long, I'm going to be a complete Buddha, you know. So don't worry about me, Dad. You know, don't cry for me, Argentina. Okay. Then there's the story of the lady who comes up and offers him some yogurt. Do you know this story? Or milk or yogurt? And it's actually a bowl of milk, and she has taken it from 1,000 cows. And she has taken the best part of 1,000 and mixed it all into one bowl. Okay, her name is Lekima. And she gives him this milk. And at that moment, he decides to give up stupid asceticisms. You know, like, he breaks with the old, his five friends. that he's gone out in the forest with, he breaks with them, and they criticize him. You know, they say, oh, you gave up the yogi's way, you know, you're not a pure monk anymore, you know, and now you're corrupt, you're taking food, you know, from a lady. And he says, the extreme thing doesn't make it for me. You know, he's just like, you know, I'm going to take care of my body, I'm going to be healthy. And then his body begins to take on a golden color. Okay. Mm. Then he goes to the heart of enlightenment, which is where? Bodhgaya, or Vajrasana. Mm. And he goes into a meditation called diamond-like meditation. Dorje Thapa Thigmenzin. Okay. And then he sees that he has to get enlightened. So he goes out and he pulls a bunch of grass from around the fields, and he sets it down in a little pile in front of the Bodhi tree, and he sits down. Okay, that's the eighth Buddha deed. And I love the verse. Oh, here's the verse. Tender Daki Ludi Kam Kyang Rung. I don't give a damn if my whole body dries out under this goddamn tree. Loosely translated. Rupa Papa Shanam Shikyang Rung. I don't care if my bones rot here. I don't care if my skin falls off. I don't care if my body just disintegrates. Kalmang Yeke Chanju Matopar. Until I reach enlightenment, Tendilan, I will not stir from this seat. You know, like, it's really beautiful. He says, until I get enlightened, I'm not getting up. You know, like, he's just like, they call it Tentokchi. Say Tentokchi. It's very famous, Tentokchi. I'll write it for you. Mm. Den means seat. What's the Sanskrit? Asana. Asana. Okay. Tok means via or on. On one seat, cheek means one. And it's just like, it's like an act of truth. Like, I swear I'm not going to get up till I get enlightened. You know, if I die here, I'll die. Or I'll get enlightened. One or the other. I'm tired. That's it. You know, so he does it den to cheek. I like that. Anyway, it's like he's swearing to become enlightened, okay? Number nine, defeating the demons. It says here, it's really cute, he says, in order to remind those Buddhists who might come after him over the centuries that it's possible you'll get some problems and obstacles, you know? He goes through this play with the demons, okay? Like the demons. And then he kicks their butt, basically. Okay, and the way he does it, it's very beautiful here. He's got a thing called a, I think you call it, let me see what it's called. Zupu, say Zupu. Zupu. If you see a really good painting of Lord Buddha, there's a little bump here. And there's a tiny hair. There's a hair follicle and there's a tiny hair. And supposedly you could pull this hair out and stretch it around like a whole galaxy. You know, like if you kept pulling it, it would just come out. And I believe they say that this particular sign comes from taking your lama to the airport and stuff like that. Like, I'm not hinting, okay? But the karma of taking your lama, like doing a Margie thing, if you know Margie in New York. Like, she used to drive me anywhere. Like, at midnight, 3 o'clock, Lama Supa also, like, 3 o'clock in the morning, Lama Supa needs a ride somewhere, just calls her, and she comes. She's got, like, 20 kids, grandkids. She's got busy. She's got to get to work in the morning. She gets in her car, she goes. And this is supposedly the karmic cause of this particular thing. But then you get some kind of powers. You can send out powers from this Zupu. And so he does. He sends out light from the Mintam, from the chakra. What's it called? Ajna chakra. There's a chakra here, yeah. And then he sends out light and destroys demons with it. Okay, like that. And if you ever get into a long retreat and can do higher tantric Dzogchen practices, this becomes developed a lot. You can work on developing it and stuff like that. So anyway, this light goes to the demons' places and wipes them out, basically. And he lists all the kinds of demons that got wiped out. But in the higher teachings, okay, there's actually, he went through defeating four demons. And I thought you should know the four demon thing, okay? It's a nice thing to know. It's very famous. Where is that? You want me to write them? You got anything else you got to do today? No. I mean, you might, let's just do it, okay? I'm sorry. We'll give you a nice dinner afterwards if you cook it. Say, Dushi.
Dushi.
Du means demon, or evil spirit or something like that. Okay? She means the four. So this is the general name down here, the four demons. Okay? And the first one is called Nyomongkidu. I've shortened it to Nyomongdu. Say Nyomongdu. Which is? Yeah. Now, there's this big debate in the scriptures. And I'm not going to do the whole debate, but there's like four different positions on when do you defeat this demon? At what stage? Let's say in the paths, Salam Ki Namja, in the system of the bhumis and the paths, when is it that you actually defeat this demon? Yeah, Miloblam. As you go into the fifth path, reaching the fifth path and defeating this demon are simultaneous. What about bodhisattva levels? Huh? Eighth. Okay, eighth. You actually reach what's nirvana for the other tracks on the eighth bodhisattva level. And then you use 9, 10, or 9, or however you want to count it, as overcoming obstacles to omniscience. Okay? But you destroy your last mental affliction before you get enlightened, you see? If you follow the 10 paths, the 10 bodhisattva bhumi system. Because the final mental affliction is what? According to the higher schools. Subtle ignorance. Ignorance. Not understanding the thing about projections. You see? So, you know, some lower systems don't even say that that's a mental affliction. And the definition of it in the 12 links is that it's not a mental affliction. You know, that it's a cause for mental affliction, but it's not a mental affliction. And then there's a whole long debate. But anyway, you stop seeing things self-existently forever by the eighth bodhisattva bhumi. Okay? So there's this whole debate, you know, like Jetsun Kapa says in his Serteng, which is his book on the perfection of wisdom. It's like this thick. He wrote it when he was very young. Like I think he was 30-something. And then later he kind of said, I wrote it a little too quick or something like that. You know, like later he kind of implied that, I mean it's known among Galukpas that that book has a few positions that are a little bit touchy. No one's going to say Jetsun Kapa made a boo-boo. But they would say, Jetsun Kapa himself said, I did that sort of roughly, and you guys have to, you know, expand on that as you go. You know, he said that. So anyway, this is the position in his book called The Golden Rosary, okay, Serteng, is that actually that demon must have got defeated before. Because you get rid of it at the eighth bodhisattva bhumi. You don't have to wait to get enlightened to get rid of that demon. Okay. What's the second demon? Say chi-dut.
Chi-dut.
Chi-dut. What's chi? Death. Yeah, demon of death. Okay. At what point do you become immortal? You see, at what point do you stop the death process? And Jetsun Kapa says something interesting. He says, you know, you could say first bodhisattva level.
Because
okay.
Realized being defeated.
Well, that's one point. That's a good point. That's a really good point. But even if you don't buy that, well, the causes of death have been, you're not going to collect any new causes for death, which is why you can say 7 lifetimes, you see? Then you can say, I know it's going to be 7 lifetimes. Like, I'm in Fat City for my whole life. Fat City, no worries. 7 lifetimes at the most. You can only say that if you can be absolutely sure that you will never collect any karma to be reborn or die again. You see, I mean, maybe you got to work off what you had, which is not much left, after billions and countless lifetimes, but as far as the future, you're not collecting any new. And then he said, you know, but you can say when he got enlightened, he overcame the demon of death, in the sense that he wouldn't even take 7 more lifetimes or anything. He's just finished. Okay, so there's that argument. When do you defeat the demon of death? You can say it either way. Okay. What's the third one? Say Pumbaa?
Pumbaa.
What's that? Yeah, meaning impure mental and physical parts of you. Impure mind, impure body. You know, body which can die, mind which has any kind of impurity. And that you can pretty much throw into what? As far as time, when you get rid of it. When you defeat this demon. Like what stage? Yeah, Buddhahood. You could say Buddhahood, or you could say first on the same idea, but most scriptures say Buddhahood. You know, your transformation into the body of light, the tantric transformation. And by the way, you should know, okay, every tantric text says all Buddhas get enlightened with tantra. You know, nobody uses the sutra way. Nobody gets enlightened the sutra way. You know, sooner or later, if you talk about Tato Tepachik, ultimately one path, everybody gets enlightened through tantra. It's the only way. Yeah. Everybody who ever got enlightened by practicing tantra. Okay. Be that as it may. Pumbudu, okay? Anyway, that's when your body changes into light. That's when you've overcome the demon of your impure heaps. Okay. This one is tough.
Is it all just an instantaneous
life? No. No. Is it instantaneous? No. Right? I mean, that's why when you study Dzogchen scriptures, they've got that thing about your lama will come with a knitting needle and poke it into your arm to see how you're doing. You see? Like, how far is your body into the body of light? You see? Later. You know? And you start to develop resistance to cold, heat, hunger, stuff like that. I mean, as your chakras start to perform better, as your channels open, then, you know, you're less, vulnerable to disease or pain or cold or hot. Or so from that, I would say it's that final opening of the channels and withdrawal of the channels is gradual. Okay. So I guess so, but they say don't count on it, right? Get it done now. Yeah, but I guess if you did it then you could, yeah, it'd be faster. Say Lai,
Hui,
Du. This is a weird one. Like, if you ever see it in a list, you say, what the hell is that? The demon of the divine youth. Pu means kid, right? Fa means divine. The demon of divine youth. And this is a reference to a specific evil spirit called Garab Wangchuk, whose function is to interrupt you when you're defeating the other three demons. Like, anytime you're getting close to defeating the other three demons, Garab Wangchuk just wakes up and starts to bug you, try to get your mind off it. You know, I was reading, who is that? My favorite Christian author. Who's that? C.S. Lewis, yeah. He's like, he describes the God of Wangchuk in my mind. You know, he's like, they'll be sophisticated, they'll be in New York, they'll be taking you out to Starbucks. Just at the moment when you're about to do your yoga practice, they're like, you want to go to Starbucks? You know, and you're just like, you know, and they don't have horns, and they don't have a tail, and they don't have a pitchfork, but they're like, hey, let's go out and have some coffee, you know? And you're like, and you're just about to turn around and walk into your room to do your yoga or your meditation, and they're like, hey, let's go to Starbucks. Yeah, let's go. Yeah, yeah, we'll talk about some this movie that's out or something. You know, and they just, that's Garab Wangchuk. And so it's an archetype, you see? It's not like there's one guy named Garab Wangchuk. It's just that this one is bugging you all the way up to Buddhahood. This one's job is when you get close to beating up one of the other three demons, he steps in and distracts you. Okay, so you can call it the demon of distraction or something like that. Okay, that's his name. We finished the demons now, and we're gonna go back to the 12 deeds. Oh, and I like this one. Some of the demons picked up mountains and threw it at him. Other demons took up had special like machines. And like laser guns or something, you know, and tried to use them on him. And others took up swords or shot arrows at him. And they all turned into flowers before they reached him. Okay, you know that story. When they couldn't succeed with the violent methods, then the girl stepped in. Okay, and he names like five different beautiful ladies who came and tried to tempt Lord Buddha into getting distracted that way. Okay, then he uses a special meditation that's in the Abhidharma called ugly meditation, and he meditates on them as rotten bodies and maggots like eating out their insides, and then he's like No thanks. Okay. Then somebody other, the last demon comes and says, it's not possible to get enlightened. You know, like doubt. Like doubt comes. Like you never hear about the last one, you know. But the last demon is like doubt. Doubt comes and says, I just don't think anyone could collect that much good karma. You know, to change your body into light, you know. I don't think you could do it, you know. I just don't think it's possible. You know? And Lord Buddha says, how'd you become a deity? You know, how'd you become like a God realm person? And he says, I made a high offering to a high being, you know. So Lord Buddha's like, I've done that hundreds of thousands of times. No problem. Okay? Like, it's interesting, you know. He doesn't talk about emptiness, karma. He's saying, I have shown devotion to my lamas, my countless times. So, don't worry about it, you know. Kind of cool. Okay. Then he lifts up his left hand, his right hand, and he touches the earth. You see that with some Buddha images, right? It's called the touching the earth gesture, and he just puts his hand down on the earth like that, you know. And he says, this earth belongs to all people, all living beings. This earth belongs to all living beings. Gyuda migyu nam shing nye kun me. The earth doesn't discriminate between the beings who walk on it, you know. It's not like it's softer for some creatures and harder for other creatures, right? Dini daki wangte dag tsun me. And I am the Lord of this whole earth, and I speak no lie. Dila kyuki daki wang chushi. You belong to the earth, you belong to me. Like, he's talking to the demons, you know. I am now the Lord of this earth, and you're under my power now. So cool your jets, you know. Like he's like, I know. Then it says, he struck the earth, you know, like that. Like he's been saying that, and then he goes, bam. Then there's this big earthquake among the whole universe. You know? Like he's like, I really like that. Anyway, then a deity, a woman deity, rises up out of the earth, a golden deity, up to her waist, out of the ground, and she says, you are it. And she goes back. She just disappears. You know, it's so cool. I like that. Anyway, and everything you said is true. Oh, and then the demons sing him a song, which is in the Sojong ceremony. And it's very beautiful. We memorize it. We do it twice a month in the monk's Sojong ceremony. Okay, and I like that song, but we don't have time to do the whole song. But I threw it. I threw the whole thing in here for you, so that you know. You know, what are we up to? 10th deed, turning the wheel of the Dharma. So in the 15th, the dates here are a little different. But anyway, I think it's a different month of counting. I want to say, the Buddha stirs from his enlightenment, right? And he says, "Sap shi chodal usel dumache." It's deep. It's peace. It's beyond all self-existence. It's the clear light. It's the unchanging thing. And he just sits there for 49 days. You know, he doesn't move for 7 weeks because he thinks nobody will ever get it. You know, and that's the kind of cool, you know, like he's describing emptiness, right? He's talking about emptiness. He just says, nobody will ever get it. You know, and he's talking about Dharmakaya. He says, nobody will ever get it. So he just sits there. He's like, what's the use of trying to talk to anybody? So for 49 days, he sits there, okay? I like Sarah Judson. Like, okay, you wanted this, right? I want to give you the whole thing. I think it'd be sad not to do the whole thing. He's got what he did on each week. Okay, so here's what he did for each week. During the first of the 7 weeks, right, divine youths and maidens come and praise him and make offerings to him. Okay. This is really cool. During the second week, he goes for a walk among the 100,000 world systems. Okay? I mean, a thousand, right? from the diamond cutter. He goes for a walk. They use the word chakpa, which means he goes for a walk among the a million world systems. I like that. Third one, he sits in front of the Bodhi tree and stares at it without blinking. I mean, if you were there, you felt it, right? That was something. Wow. During the fourth week, he goes for a walk from the Eastern Ocean to the Western Ocean of India, I presume. Okay, to the two shores. During the fifth week, he goes to the land of the Nagas, which is supposed to be underground, and they keep scriptures there and stuff like that, right? During the sixth week, he sits under a different tree, which is Nyagroda, and I don't know why it's special, but he's into trees during this period. In the seventh week, he sits under a different tree called the Freedom Tree, and I don't know what that is. Mm-hmm. Then it says here, in order to inspire the rest of us disciples in future generations, these great worldly deities like Brahma and Chakra, they appear before Lord Buddha. He says there are 68 times 100,000, whatever that is. Yeah, 680,000. Yeah, anyway. They appear, and they appoint a representative, and they offer Lord Buddha a wheel with 1,000 spokes made of pure gold. And they say, please teach. Okay. Which is the turning, represents the turning of the wheel, right? And they say, Chakra also threw in 50 gold mandalas that were 75 miles wide. Okay. I don't know. Then on this fourth day of the month, which I already told you about, he goes to Varanasi, or Benares, right? If you've ever been there, I mean, the energy is unbelievable. And he goes to the grove at Saranath, and he sits down, and he teaches his first five students, okay, who were the five tiger cubs, four cubs and mommy from that he gave his body to before in a previous life. There are thrones set up there for the three previous Buddhas of this eon. And he circles them, and he bows down to them, and then he sits on the fourth throne. Okay. And he starts to teach. Okay. So how old is he then? He's 29 when he leaves the palace. He does 6 years of worthless practices. So he's 35 when he gets enlightened. Okay. Then it says he teaches for 46 years after that. Okay? So he enters his teaching career, which is 46 years. And that's, I always thought, you know, grew up as a Christian, I always thought that, like, the New Testament, for me, was like a tantric thing. It's so brief, it was almost impossible to follow. And then when I met Buddhism, we have, even now, which is only a tiny percentage of what Lord Buddha spoke, but we have 1,500 of his teachings extant in the Kangyur. So whenever I met Christians in my life, I'm like, you got the New Testament, which is about 30 pages of real teachings. And we got... No, we're just fortunate. I mean, I'm not like saying, oh, we're better than you or something like that. I'm just saying, if Jesus had lived for 46 more years or whatever it is, and taught... You know, I am not, you know, we have this corpus. We have this huge body of explanation, which is really, really useful and really great to me. So until he was 80, he taught. Some people, normally they say 81. They count the time in the womb, which was 10 months. So 81 is considered a very dangerous time for lamas. You know, like Trigong Rinpoche passed away in his 81st year. And we were very worried when Rinpoche got to be 81. But our karma seems to be good enough. That, I mean, that we're really lucky we got through that time. Okay. Then they're careful to say he pretended to get in, to go into Parinirvana, and they don't describe it much more than that. Okay. So we finished the 12. And they quote the Golden Light Sutra that we taught in Mongolia, which is the biggest sutra for Mongolians. Sangin yang and yomin da. Buddhas never do parinirvana thing. Chökyam nupa mingyurte, and the Dharma never ends. Senjan nyangi duwe chiyo nyangin depa tumbadze. But they pretend to die to help us realize impermanence, you know. And there was this big thing right after the Buddha died. All his disciples were super respectful of each other for like 5 years or something. You know, like just the event was so shocking to everybody that they studied really hard for 5 years. Then it wore off and they started to have arguments again and stuff like that. Okay. And he says, what's he say? Basically he says, nobody's taught Dharma like I'm going to teach it. Okay? Alright. And every step he took, the lotuses appeared. Okay. Then he takes 7 steps to the south. And he says, I am worthy of offerings of all humans and gods. You know, you want to give something away, give it to me. Okay. Nupcha Losagoma. Then he took 7 steps to the west. And he says, Dina, Jikten Dina Ngani Chok. This is very famous. I was going to write it for you because it's in the Sojong ceremony. And that's the last thing I promise. Dina.
Chok.
Very, very famous words. Like we say them every time we do Sojong, we say this verse. And it's like, Na means what? I. And Ni? I. You know, Ni is like, now I. Okay? It's like, now I. Jikten? In this world, Dina, choke. I'm the biggest thing in this world. Yeah. It's like Muhammad Ali used to, you know, like, I'm the greatest, you know. And it's something powerful, you know. It doesn't seem like, to me, it doesn't seem like pride or arrogance. It's just like a statement, you know. I am the highest being walking on this planet right now. Period. You know, period. And it's not like he's ashamed or embarrassed, or it's not like he's exaggerating. He's just like, on this whole planet, I happen to be the highest being walking on it right at this moment, you know. And it's just very powerful to me, you know. I just, like, when I hear that, I'm like, boom, you know. Okay. What's he got left to say? I don't know. To the north, he says, are we on the north yet? No.
Yes.
Sorry. Are we?
Yeah.
Right. He says, this is my last birth. I will have no birth, old age, death, sickness or death. I've ripped it out from the root. And he screams it with a lion's roar. You know, like he's not being shy, you know. I am the highest of all living beings. Okay. Like that. He repeats that. Then he takes 7 steps down. Like, he's got to do the 10 directions, right? Mm-hmm. Like, anyway, he takes 7 steps down and he says, I will defeat all demons. You know, I will send down a rain of Dharma that will extinguish all the fires in the hell realms. I'll make everybody happy. Okay? And then the last thing he says is, he takes 7 steps up into the air. Right. Everyone will raise their eyes. That's all. Okay. Everyone will look up. It reminds me of Kieran. He used to always do this thing to me. You know? When he was a little baby, he'd always go like that. Everyone will look. Everyone's eyes will rise to the sky. Something like that. Okay. That's all. So we're done. Last thing. This is now, I'm just opening it for discussion. Let's just go around. I'll choose people, okay? We need 12 victims. Yeah. Oh. Sorry? Yeah, well, I think, you know, when Jesus... when Jesus first came out, he was in, I think, Galilee. Nazareth. And he came out and said, I'm enlightened, you know. And he lost every disciple he had. It's very interesting. And he's all depressed. And he comes home and he says to Matthew or somebody, he says, why are you hanging around? Everybody's already left me. And he says, where are we going to go? It's Petra, right? He says, where are we going to go?
Yeah.
Like, everyone thinks you're crazy now. And everyone thinks you're having delusions of grandeur. And everyone left him. Like, he had thousands of disciples. They all left. They said, now he's like flipped out. You know, now he's gone over now he's gone overboard. He thinks he's like this special thing, you know. And they just left. And so he comes back. He's got like five disciples that left. And he's like, why are you still here? And they said, well, where are we going to go? You know? something like that, I think. And then the whole thing started again. You know, there was a whole nother cycle, and that's another story. But I want to ask each person to think carefully about the 12 deeds and try to relate it to your life. Why is each of the 12 deeds a personal message to your life? You know? And, what is the higher significance of the act of getting compassion and moving out of Gandhian paradise? So I'll start with Dr. Stump, which only your wife calls you that. But it's okay. I can use it sometimes, right? What is a metaphor for us? What do you think?
I would say it's renunciation, giving back where we were, samsara, to where we want to go, which is paradise.
Yeah, like give up what you had for something higher. Okay. And I'll throw mine in. I think he's set for himself. He's got everything he needs. He's in his perfect place, right? But it's like this Jesus thing in a way. He's going to come down and try to relate to normal schmucks. You know? And I take it as a message that, you know, you could stay here in Diamond Mountain. This class is extremely enjoyable. I love to sit with my tantric students. We sit there and talk about tantra. And you know, it's just enjoyable. I don't need anything else, you know? But maybe you get a wake-up call that says, well, but you got to go out to other places, and you have to appear as other things to other people. You know, like take on a normal human body. And I just see it as like going to the prison. We went yesterday, you know. Like there's no reason why Debbie Bai, she could sit here and do Sanskrit with us, and you know, it's calm, and we have nice food, and we have orange juice, and you know, there's no trouble, and there's no threat from anybody, and here she's going to a prison where people could get out and kill her, you know. And she does it, you know. I think it's like, once you're set personally, you got to go out and go to the world, even when it's not so nice, places that are not so nice, and people that are not so nice to be around maybe sometimes, and take on their form and relate to them. And that's that whole thing about, and I'd call it market share. If it's a business book, write a business book. If it's a yoga book, write a yoga book. If it's about relationships, then do something about relationships. If it's about business, you know what I mean? Be willing and able to appear in different forms to different people when they need it. You know? Once you're set, you know? Core and morph. It's going to become a word. Core and morph. Once you have a solid core, then go morph, yeah. And don't be shy about it, you know? I mean, do whatever you have to do to appear to different people. Don't be, like, hesitant. I mean, Lord Buddha, don't sit there in your own personal paradise and not want to go out and talk to normal people in a normal way. Okay, Debbie Bai, what's the next deed? Going mother's womb. I'll phrase the question on that one a little bit differently. Why would it be particularly useful for Lord Buddha to pretend to go into a womb?
So he can be
like us? I think so. So we can relate to them. You know, in the scripture, I didn't read it to you, but it says, the womb felt like a crystal palace, a huge crystal palace to Lord Buddha. You know, it's like, there wasn't this squishy, dirty, hot thing. It was like, you know, a huge via, you know. But I think very much to make us relate, you know? relate to him. Jim, what's the next one? Mastering? No? Oh, the actual birth, which I think you can just throw that into the other one, I think. Yeah. Going through all that trouble. But what about mastering the worldly arts?
I think it's also like relating to other people. I mean, like, don't be a Dharma bum, get a job, be useful, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, live the way people live,
yeah.
Understand their problems,
yeah.
You know? And that is very personal to me, because I had like this career track going till I was about 30,
yeah.
And then about the time, I guess I was about 33 or 34 when I first started teaching from you, and there was just no jobs, and mm-hmm. I had all this great time to, you know, study and meditate.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that is a message, you know, that do the career thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think it's just totally the career thing. And there's a time in your life, I think, like Lord Buddha is saying, on a tantric level, career and family are very tantric. You know, like no problem at all. On a tantric level, career and family and children and all that, all those paths are very powerful ways of getting enlightened. I think for those of us who enter a career for worldly purposes, with a different motivation, not tantric. Tantric motivation is so parshat. You know, let's set tantric motivation aside. But most of us go through this thing from 25 to 45, where you're just so into your career. You know, like, you feel so powerful. Well, I mean, a lot of people. If you've been in corporate life, it's very exciting. It's like, what do they call that? What do they call that drug in your...
Adrenaline.
It's adrenaline. Like, 24-7 adrenaline, you know. Watch that millions of dollars flow, you know. Watch that... thousands of diamonds go out the door, thousands of diamonds come in the door, you know, and you're like,
make all these important decisions,
yeah,
what
yeah.
you do, you know, it's like, don't worry about
yeah, it. Like you're so into it, yeah. You know, and you don't come out of it. It's like a dream that you don't come out of until you're 50 or something, most people are 60, you know, not just a wake up, you get fired as a senior manager and you're like trying to get a job at 60, you know. It's the career thing, I think he's trying to say, watch out for the career thing, you know, like, if it's a normal motivation, and it's so hard. Hardest people in the world to teach Dharma to are people that are in the middle of their career, of when they're in the middle of that power and that energy and that strength and that excitement and that adrenaline. It's so hard to talk to them, you know. I think that's why the Business Institute is so cool, because we've been able to pluck a few people out of that who are, they're still doing their career, but now they're doing it in a tantric way, you know. What's the next one? Fooling around with the ladies, the Alastair. Not that you do it, I'm just...
I think that's the setup for the renunciation.
Yeah.
Not in that Lord Buddha is demonstrating that he was engaging in a wonderful worldly life.
Yeah.
And then presumably, it then demonstrates that another life wasn't satisfying.
I like that, yeah. Yeah. Like... And in a way, I always told people that I was lucky because I didn't get ordained until I was 30. Like, I had been through college before, normal college with girls and stuff and drugs, and not a lot of drugs, but, and then rock and roll and everything before I became ordained. And I thought that somehow the monks in Tibet were at a disadvantage because they still thought there might be something there. And so in a way, it's good to get it over, like, have it. And then give it up, you know. Experience it and explore it and see that it can't satisfy you. And then give it up. So, yeah, I think that's a very beautiful... I think it's... You know, and Sarah Jessen was so careful to say that this was a very necessary step in the 12, you know. He was so careful to say that. And I really believe that. The First Dalai Lama says sex and food are the main interests in the desire realm. And then I believe that you have to overcome those two. Mm. You have to get over those two. You have to experience them and get renunciation. Then leave them, right? So the next one is the obvious, Andriana. Yeah, I like that. I like that. And then on a larger point, that a lot of people I meet who are into their careers, intellectually they understand everything, but they have this fear of leaving the career, you know, or dropping down to a lower position. Like, it wasn't so hard for me. I wasn't struggling between career and yogi. I was struggling between vice president and manager. That was harder, you see? Because if I took my 2 months off a retreat, I would get demoted to a manager. And it was so fun being a VP. You know, so in a way, I think that's the willingness to leave behind what you could have been. You know, a world emperor. You know, I could have been a world emperor. And then to give that up, to be a normal schmuck and have 14 bosses up above you in the career ladder, and being willing to become a corporate peon, knowing that what you're doing is more important, you know, and having the strength to hold out and say, okay, I'll make 50,000 less than I used to, and I'll have 16 bosses that I don't like who are stupider than me, and you know, and but it's worth it, you know, and it's kind of a renunciation, you know, to be less than you could have been. I think that's the message of leaving the palace, you know, right? If he had stayed, he would have become a world emperor, you know. The willingness to be less than you could have been worldly. It's very hard. It's really hard, you know. You know, when you get high up in the worldly system. What's the next one? Rebecca. What's the message there? I mean, Sarah Jetson said it a little bit. Expect the demons to leave you alone. You know, you will get major obstacles, and just when you think you're over one, then something worse will come. No, really, and they get heavy. People dying, you know, people lives being shattered. You know, heavy things to start to happen, and you know, it's, you got to expect it. It will come. You know. I think secondarily, there. What was the other thing? There was something else there. What was that? False paths. You know? Like paths that don't really work. Like, be careful. Don't waste your time. 6 years, you know, poking himself and putting fires on himself. Somebody at the prison ran up and gave me this article about some guy in another country that I won't name who got through of a 7-year running program through the mountains of his country to prove that he's a worthy Buddhist monk. And if he ever stops for more than 24 hours, he's sworn to disembowel himself. And this guy is unbelievably brave and you know, glorious thing. And I'm like, this is perfect bullshit. You know, this is perfect thing that Lord Buddha said, don't get into that kind of stuff, you know. And that's an extreme example, but I mean, there's other paths where you do the opposite and you're just like oming all day. And you're not doing anything, you're not thinking about anything. And I think there are these two extremes. You know, and I think it's a message of check out the path you get into so you don't sit there for 6 years and then decide you made a boo-boo. You know, I think that's the second message for that one for me. What's the next one? Michael Moore. What is it?
Going to Bodh Gaya.
Oh, going to Bodh Gaya. Some scriptures say going to Bodh Gaya. Some scriptures say sitting down in front of the tree.
Like an asana.
Yeah.
Well, he's overcome. He's gone through everything. I just know this is it.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it.
I mean, to me, I want to cry when I get to that point. You know, he sits down and he says, either I make it here or I die here. That's so cool. You know, like I'm afraid to talk about it because I'm afraid it might inspire me. But I have all these bodies around Diamond Mountain. But he's like, I'm sitting down and I'm not getting up. Death death or enlightenment, you know? And that's really cool to me, you know, that seems really cool to me. So yeah, it's the decision, you know, I'm going to do it, you know. Who's hiding behind? I think Benjamin's really getting low down there. What's next?
Destroying an army of demons. It just seems like the demons are endless. I heard a great teaching by John Bishop about how devious the demons are and all the time just from harassing us, and how can we defeat them when there's only one of us and countless of them. And, it's just about understanding that you have to become that powerful.
Yeah, that's all. And I'd say, yeah, multiple forms. They come in multiple forms. Could be nice, could be meant.
Could you see that as the mental afflictions is all the karma that you generated from all the years?
Good point. I forgot to say something, which is very important. The four demons, there's demons on three levels. Okay, on a very Hinayana level, Lord Buddha shoots the light out from this thing here and destroys all these particular guys. On a medium level, Lord Buddha defeats the four demons that I listed. Those are called the rough four demons, the gross four demons. And then there's the four subtle demons. And they are basically all ties to different kinds of self-existent grasping, seeing things as self-existent. There's a subtle four demons that I didn't talk about, but they all relate to subtle forms of taking things as self-existent. You know? So yeah, very much that. Very much a more subtle level. I'm glad you reminded me. Allison, did you do one? What's next? Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it's
possible.
Yeah, that's the most important thing to me. It's possible. You know? Like, if he's already gotten light, why didn't he just shoot down this world and start teaching? You see? He could have done that. If he's been enlightened since 30,000 lifetimes or whatever before. But he's like trying to make a point. You can do it, guys. Look, this is how you do it. You know, and like, you know, I think it's just a big cheerleader thing. You know, look, you can do it, you know. Yeah, it's possible. Because there's lots of people who say that deathlessness is not possible, right? I mean, that's very common. Buddhism is rarely taught in those terms, right? Very rarely will someone sell you Buddhism as more than something to be calm or friendly. You know, and that's the real point of it, right? Okay, Catherine, next one.
The wheel of Dharma.
Yeah.
The importance of extending the awareness cultivated through all of the spiritual path to others.
Yeah, I think so.
To help them eliminate the same sufferings.
I like it.
I would only add one more thing, and that Winston can surely tell us, well, due to his specialty.
He mentioned the three. So we need to learn different explanations that will be appropriate for different audiences.
Yeah, yeah. That big deal, that big thing, that they always make it plural. You see, in English they always translate as turning the wheel. It's not that. In Tibetan it's turning the wheels of the Dharma. So that it's very likely that you will have to morph in different forms to teach people. And maybe even things that aren't strictly accurate. At that time. I mean, you hear His Holiness talk in Central Park even. It's quite different from Beacon Theater, right? And you can you taste it there, the gross difference between his presentation in Central Park and the one at the Beacon Theater, right? It's extremely... He's so good at that, you know. He'll just morph immediately to the audience, you see. Kimberly, last one. Then you get to have dinner. I love it, yeah. That's what the homework master says for the last one. Things are not, you know, it's like the final statement that things may not be what they seem. You know? Okay. All right. You're done. Sorry it went so long. But to me, you know, it's just the whole thing came up like this one beautiful package, that whole 12 deeds, you know. And I think you can really teach it to others now in a complete way, you know. So.
Sangye chindu mitte uvayi
Idam guru ratnam andavakandaya kanyami Dike vokun sanam yeshe tatsamshi Sanam yeshe lechume Tampakuni topashu.
Cool. Really cool. Yeah. Congratulations on Uttara Tantra. Congratulations on Uttara Tantra. Really, really cool. Really cool. So start thinking of how to teach it, right? And my idea is that because the classes were so spread out, that we'll have two reviews. And, you know, and we'll have a real chance to... And then we don't know who's going to get the newbies, so you got... They're not going to want to know about Pudgala Nariatma and all that stuff, you know. They're going to... You know, you're going to have to adjust. You're going to have to morph, right? So for the first review class, there'll be five people are going to lead that class. Okay? Five people are going to lead the first review. And then five people are going to lead the second review. I'd like you to base your leading. And they'll just be like conversations like we just had. And since we didn't get to you guys, I suggest you guys be the 10, right? 5 and 5. So, first class Mercedes. Go work from the homework master. Okay? Chukila is authorized to give away all the homework masters as of today. Okay? Get the homework masters. In lieu of readings, I couldn't finish. You will get the readings, but I'm just pumping them out as fast as I can. And we just had so much work in New York that I couldn't do it. So, I'll pump out as many as I can before the teaching, and I'll keep working on them very hard. Like, I won't do anything else for that time. But, you're going to lead the first class review. And I suggest you restrict yourself to what's on the homework master. And then you'll do the second. No? Anthony second. Chukila third. Gail fourth. Susan fifth. Okay. Earl sixth, which will be the next class, right?
So the next class
one. Yeah, you start with... You're going to be the leader of the class six review. You want to do it, little one? You want to do this class, 10? Since you were here? No?
Oh, no.
You don't feel comfortable?
There's enough people. That's
such a no.
I think you haven't been... yeah. Bunny? 7? You comfortable with that?
You don't be here?
Will you be here?
That'll be the Saturday.
Okay. That'll be the Saturday?
Yeah, 6,
yeah.
8, 9, 10.
And then Dr. Stone? Mm-hmm. 8? Debbie 9, Jim 10, good. Okay. Oh, Doug didn't get one. Do you mind if I give Doug 10? Is that cool? Okay. So Doug's got 10. So you're gonna lead it from the homework master. The master has like a long paragraph for every answer, and you know. And then I think we'll just work with that because that's all the time we'll have. And that's it. I'll tell you which of the questions are on the final. During the first review. Okay? So we'll do that.